First of all, thank you very much. Before we actually, I think they're supposed to be handing out some sort of samples if they haven't already. I'm not sure exactly. I didn't get a sample, so I don't know exactly what they put into the samples. Okay, they didn't pick. Before we start with actually looking at the samples, I want to discuss a little bit the whole idea of bug infestation and checking for bugs. You know, a lot of people seem to think that bug checking is, you know, some sort of new finagle type of idea. People didn't used to check for bugs. My parents didn't check for bugs. Or maybe even their rabbi, their mentor, their teacher, whoever it was that they very much looked up to in a spiritual, halachic type of frame of mind, that they didn't check all these things for bugs the way we do. Maybe, you know, they checked the romaine lettuce before Pesach or something like that, but like all these things, the way we check and the way we buy bug-free products and whatever, they didn't really do that. The truth is, I don't know how historically correct that is, and I'll explain what I mean. My Rebbe, one of the OU Poskim, Rabbi Belsky Zecharino Levracha, so he actually would say that when he remembers when he was a child, they checked almost everything for bugs. Fresh fruit, greens, practically every agricultural item, so to speak, that they ate, they checked for bugs. And they cleaned it, they had different methods for cleaning different things. What happened was actually right before World War II, even before World War I a little bit, there was a big emphasis in the world of science on nerve gases that were created both as a means of warfare, but maybe even a little bit more importantly, they were used, and they still are used within, to a certain extent, as pesticides. Many of them, though, what happened was afterwards when they discovered how intense the outcome of their use could be in terms of killing people and things like that. Whatever kills a bug, enough of it can probably kill a human also. So the FDA and various other Misrade Briut around the world started to outlaw the use of many of these types of chemicals that were used as pesticides. These chemicals were very, very, very effective. There's various brand names for different ones that were developed, but they're all a form of nerve gas. And they were very effective in eradicating, maybe even entirely to a large extent, various infestations in produce. Once they ceased using these chemicals, you know, it's not like you just wiped out, you did a mass extermination of some sort of thrip or some sort of worm or whatever it is, it's going to take time till they start reappearing in our fresh produce. And then mostly during the 80s was really when we started seeing infestation again. Because of that, it became more of a new item to check for bugs. Now that was coupled with a different issue, that we live in the microwave day and age. Everything is deep frozen almost instantaneously, and everything is microwavable. We expect to have instant gratification, that you pull something out of the fridge and you can use it. Out of the freezer, it's just a matter of 30 seconds more in the microwave and you can use it. Because of this, it's become much more cumbersome, at least psychologically, to check for bugs and to clean various items from their bug infestation. And that's why that's why we view it as such a burden, and that's also why we are taken advantage of by the market, so to speak, that there are so many bug-free products that you can buy, whether it's the fresh frozen, kind of a oxymoron, but the fresh frozen produce and the various bagged produces for the greens and things that aren't so apt to being frozen, won't do them so much good. You'll end up with some sort of soggy salad instead. And so, yeah, but we're the ones who are looking for that because we want that instant use to be able to open up the refrigerator, pull out our bag of lettuce, dump it into a bowl, cut up some various other greens on top of it, and serve it. Now, with that being said, I want to explain the halachic ramifications for bug checking. What needs to be checked? What doesn't need to be checked? What do you have to be concerned with? What don't you have to be concerned with? What's called a bug? What's not called a bug? You know, my uncle tells us that when he was in yeshiva, actually here in Eretz Yisrael, that there was one of the rebbeim got up and was giving a shiur before Pesach on checking the lettuce for bugs, and he said, you know, you have to use, if you don't have a microscope to sample check it, you should definitely be using a magnifying glass. And so some wisecrack in the back of the classroom who raised his hand and said, well, Rabbi, what did they do before the days of microscopes? So another wisecrack said, well, that's what you call rabbinic supervision. Anyway, the idea is that that's definitely a bit extreme, and I don't think that's what halacha requires from anybody. You don't have to buy any real special apparatus. Sometimes a little bit of special apparatus might help. It might enhance one's ability to make it easier, again, similar to buying something which was already bug-free, so that you don't have to go through the headache of checking and cleaning, etc. So you might want to buy a bright light so that it's easier for you to see, so you're not looking and saying, well, is that a bug? Is that not a bug? Let me see if it moves. Let me see, do I see little legs? No, it makes it much easier if you have, you know, some big fluorescent light or a big LED light or something like that. It makes it easier for you to view what's going on that piece of lettuce or the fruit or vegetable that you're checking. Now, the halacha is as follows. Really, you know, what's a bug? It's some insignificant little tiny thing. I mean, we're not talking about a huge worm, because that you'd understand that you wouldn't want to eat anyway. Of course, you take that off. You know, sometimes I'll come into one of the food services that we certify, and you know, the mashgiach will call me over to see some of the greens that he was checking for use in the place, and you'd be amazed as to some of the things that they find on these greens. Some of them can be quite large. You can have like mamish little snails that aren't so tiny that are crawling around on a head of lettuce. So, you know, and then I always tell the restaurant management, you see how worthwhile it is for you to have a shkacha. Look, you know, you could have had a lawsuit right there. That would have been just, you know, sliced up, served, and somebody would have sued you for the snails in their salad. It didn't say on the menu included snails. But for the most part, that's not what we're checking for. And that you notice in your own house if there would be something sizable on anything that you're eating. You know, you notice if an apple has a wormhole in it or something like that. You notice that. That's things that most people notice when they pick up a picturesque fruit to eat and all of a sudden something's wrong with it. But those little tiny things that are like almost, I'm not talking about the stuff that are microscopic, because we just devalidated that. We said you don't have to check for the things that are microscopic. But things that are nearly microscopic, very small things that you had to give a real good glance at it, a real good look, not just a glance, sorry, a real good look at it to see, to notice. So they're small, they should be insignificant. Why are we concerned with that? Isn't there a klal of things being bottled, being nullified to the greater mixture? So this is like, you know, it's insignificant. Why should we be so busy with these little tiny things going on around our fruit? You know, I'm going to pull us to a slightly different direction. There was probably about a decade ago, there was a whole issue. It wasn't the first time it came up, but that was when many of the halachic authorities became a little bit more strict in terms of their rulings. The water in New York has something called a copper pot in it. These little tiny white bugs that you can see, and you can see them. It's not something that's microscopic. You can see them with the naked eye. Rabbi Belsky, Zecharenu Levracha, held that they were permissible. Rav Schechter was the other OU postik at the time, still, he felt that we should be machmer for it, and the OU asked outside halachic authorities and decided to, yes, be concerned about it on those, especially because all it entailed is putting a filter on the water. Rabbi Belsky felt that they're okay. He drank the water without any filter. What? All I said was Rabbi Belsky felt that the water is okay without being filtered. That could be a topic for a shiur in of itself. But getting back to, Right, but there are bugs that are mutter to be consumed. There's lots of bugs that are mutter to be consumed. It's a concept of minoy gavle, when the bug was created as part of the medium that you're finding it in, it's going to be mutter to consume it. If it wasn't born in the actual item, it's also relevant to a similar type of idea, not exactly similar type of idea to the anisakis, the bugs and fish, which maybe for Adar or something like that, since that's the mazel for Adar, we can talk about that, but right now we're going to try to keep back to the bugs in the fruit. I wanted to bring it just as an example. People would ask Rabbi Belsky very frequently about, you know, is it mutter to drink water with living organisms? And they'd say the question is actually to the contrary. Is it mutter to drink water that doesn't have living organisms in it? It's probably toxic and it's probably usser to consume. Everything has living organisms on it, just some things are very, very small. So when it just crosses that threshold of being visible, why are we so concerned with it? The answer is that midoraisa, biblically, we're not concerned with such things. Biblically, you're absolutely right, it's batal. We don't care about it. It becomes null and void, it becomes part of that picturesque fruit or vegetable that you're eating. Probably even a worm. Chazal made a gzera, rabbinic enactment, that a beria, something which is a complete being, is never going to be batal, because that's something that has a chashivos, has a significance in its own right. And because of that, it's not batal, midrabanan, rabbinically. Because of that, the iser d'oraisa, the biblical prohibition, will apply, and bugs are aser. This bug wasn't batal midrabanan. So now midrabanan, they've grandfathered in, so to speak. It's not really a biblical prohibition, it's a rabbinic prohibition, because it was done only through rabbinic means. But now rabbinically it's prohibited to eat those insects. However, Chazal or Magdir, they defined what is considered an insect that's not batal, and what will we not be concerned with. And Chazal were magdir this by what the naked eye can see. Again, the naked eye when it's looking to see. Not the naked eye when, you know, well, yeah, sure, you know, you look at it. Sometimes you can look at, your kids are looking for their shoes in the morning or whatever it is, and they can't find their shoes anywhere, but it was right there, right? So what do you tell them? We're looking with your eyes closed. They weren't looking with their eyes closed because they didn't fall and trip and stumble and bump their head, but they weren't really looking the same way you were when you knew that if they missed their hasa'ah, their school bus or whatever it is to school, you're going to have to drive them the half hour to school and be stuck in traffic and miss your first morning meeting. You were looking much more significantly, much more intent on finding those shoes than your kid who probably rather miss the bus and not go to school. So we're not talking, again, we're talking about when you're looking, to use that cliche, with your eyes open, when you're looking knowingly that there might be something here and you're looking to find what might be here. So that's number one. That's criteria number one. Criteria number two, and two and three are kind of the same thing. Well, how do I define if what I see is a bug? I see a dot. Do I have to be concerned with every dot? You know, you look at a piece of lettuce and you can see lots of dots. Brown dots, green dots, darker green dots, lighter green dots, white dots, black dots, all sorts of things. Some of them might be just some sort of decay. Some of them might be some sort of secretion from some sort of insect that was maybe on that leaf at some point in time. It could be from all sorts of different things. So it could just be from the from the oxidation and the iron in the greens are coming out, right? So it could be from all sorts of things. What do I have to be concerned with is a bug. I see something there. So Chazal said either one of two things. Either that you see the anatomy of a bug, meaning that you see some sort of body with legs coming out of it, or B, that you see something that is moving. If you see something which is moving, right, not just that it fell off and is flying in the air, something which is moving up on the plant or down on the plant or whatever it is, you know that some things, dead things don't move. Right, dead men don't walk, and dead bugs don't move. So those are the basic criteria for defining a bug that's not going to be batal to whatever piece of fresh produce, to whatever produce you're eating. Yeah, but a dead bug, the only way that you're going to be able to define that it's a bug, you're right, it's not batel because it's a whole bear. If it's whole, it's not going to be batel because it's a whole burial, it's a whole creature, and it won't be batel. Because of that, the only way to see that, though, is if you see the anatomy of a bug. If you already can't identify the anatomy of a bug, then Chazal didn't make it an enactment in such a scenario. There's a lot of gzeros that pertain to the din of bittel, because with the din of bittel you can basically nullify almost anything. We have the idea also that emavatlam isur lechatchila, that you can't put a devar isur into something mutter. You can't take something which is prohibited and mix it into something which is mutter lechatchila, unless sometimes for medical purposes or something like that. Well, then we'll say, well, again, biblically it's batel, so at least you did away with the biblical prohibition. Chazal weren't going to tell you that you shouldn't take something that you need for your health. So in such a scenario, it might be more lenient. We might say it's better to mix it into a greater mixture, even though you're doing that purposely, than to take it straight. it's pertinent to Pesach with certain types of things that certain people need, you know, certain nutrients or certain enzymes or whatever that various people might need in order to be able to eat regularly over Pesach. So we'll say mix it into the food before Pesach, because then it was batel, and then it was also before Pesach, because on Pesach there's no din bittel. Again, many of these halachos have to do with because you can really do away with almost anything through the magic of bittel, of nullifying it. Okay, if you needed to get some sort of, you know, ultra special light to be able to see it, that I don't think you'd be required to do that. The reason why sometimes a light is good is because, again, if I see a dot, now I'm going to have to start looking at it a little bit better to see. Whereas if I have bright light, it's much easier for me to identify, is there a bug or is there not a bug. Now, I'm going to get into another instance where maybe using bright light might even be necessary, or definitely would be a tremendous aid to somebody trying to eat a given fruit or vegetable. Okay, now that we've established why you're checking for bugs and what's considered a bug that you have to look for, we're going to discuss something else. There's lots of fruits and vegetables out there, all sorts of different things. Theoretically, probably any of them can have bugs on them. So how am I going to define something? Does that mean that everything I put into my mouth now, I have to start checking, and I come home and I sit down to supper, and everything I pick up off my plate and every forkful and whatever it is, or when I'm preparing a dinner or a lunch or whatever it is for the family, then now every single last thing I'm going to have to start, fresh produce at least, I'm going to have to start checking for bugs and washing and cleaning and looking under lights and all sorts of different things? The answer is no. Only when there's a reasonable doubt are you going to have to check. So how do we define reasonable doubt? Again, halacha needs to have its defined parameters in order for us to know exactly what to do, because otherwise you can always pull it this way or that way. That's the way halacha works, that it has its system. It's part of the beauty of halacha. It allows us sometimes for a certain amount of flexibility, but it also creates a vehicle for it to continue being a mesorah, something which doesn't change too much that we can know exactly what to do with it. So what's required? What's considered a reasonable doubt? So there's the obvious types of things, which is something which is most of it is infested. So of course, you definitely wouldn't be allowed to eat it without checking it. But then it could be that if most of it is infested, then you're not allowed to eat it all, because you have to assume maybe all of it is really infested. I'm not finding the little tiny bug in this one, but since I know that it's more than a reasonable doubt, most of it, almost all of it, has bugs, so then maybe I can't eat it at all. And that actually happens to be true. If something has an infestation of, you know, if it's a 50% infestation or 51% for infestation, so technically that's a majority, it's 51%, right? The other side's 49, so you have a lead of 2%. That's technically true, but we'll say that there's probably an error of margin that would allow you to be a little bit more lenient, but you're going to have to check very, very well. But if it's Rov Rubo already above 70%, probably one shouldn't consume the item unless it was extremely, extremely, extremely well checked to 100% that there wasn't anything. Then in such an instance, a bright light maybe would be required to be used for various other apparatuses that would help you to be able to check it, because right now you're taking out of its being mukhzak, out of its being assumed infested. So if we're taking out of an assumed infestation, then you already need much more certainty, at least nearly 100% certainty, to be able to be allowed to consume it. But most cases, that's not what's going on. It's definitely not going to be a majority. What you might have is what's called a miut hamatsui, a reasonable minority. Meaning, I can have something if I have 1,000 apples. It's likely that one apple will have a worm in it. But that means that almost nobody's ever going to end up with a worm with an apple in it. It will happen, because 1 out of 1,000 has it, but it's extremely rare. And you say, okay, you don't have to be busy. You don't have to worry about that one apple out of 1,000 apples. What, now I'm going to go around checking every single last thing. I'm never going to find anything. I'll tell you a great story. There was a rabbi here from Eretz Yisrael, one of the rabbanim who was very big in the bug in produce field. And he came to the OU's office in America and he said, you know, everything is infested in America the same way it is in Israel and you guys just don't care, or whatever it was. So the OU said, okay, you know, prove it to us. And he said, you know, so he said, he tried, whatever, was having a hard time. One of the rabbis in the OU wasn't so convinced that, he said, maybe this guy's right. So he went out to the supermarket, bought some of the top items on this fellow's list and started checking them. Sure enough, he checked I don't remember exactly what dry fruit it was. It was some sort of dry fruit. And he found the bug in the first one he checked. And he checked the second one. And he found the bug. He said, you know what? This guy's probably right. And he called up somebody else in the office, somebody more senior, and said, you know, this guy might have something to what he's saying. He said, okay, you know, Rabbi, you say so. We'll invite him to come give a lecture. So afterwards, this rabbi who went out and bought all the produce, the dried fruit in the supermarket, he was hungry afterwards. He says, you know what? I'm going to continue checking the rest. I'm going to eat them. He checked. He said he checked about another 20 that he ate, and he didn't find another bug. So, you know, he told us to the bug rabbi when he came to speak about it, and he said, oh, you see the Ashgacha brought this. And he says, you just see our bad luck. But anyway, that being said, miut hamatsui. It's a halachic term used a lot in kashrus for all sorts of different concerns that we have, which means a found minority. Now, it's something which isn't totally, you know, not, it's there. It's there. Now, this question: what type of percentage would you need for it to be a miut hamatsui? Most posts go with a shita from the Yeshuas Yaakov that maintains 10%. Rav Eliashiv was a little bit more machmir. He felt 6.5%. And there are those who say even, you know, 1% or something like that, because you'll find 1%. You know that it's going to be found if you have something like 1%. It's not mufrach that you should even be concerned with that. Again, for halachic purposes, most poskim maintain 10%. Most machmirim go with Rav Eliashiv of 6.5%. There are very few people who are choshish for even less than that. Okay. Now, how do you define the what a miut hamatsui is? It was a story. The Chassam Sofer was the Rav in what they called Oberland, kind of, you know, between Austria and Hungary, depending on the exact point in time, in Pressburg. And he had somebody in his community was the county store, basically the local supermarket, if you will. He came to B'Shvat time and he said he's not selling dried fruit this year. So there was an uproar in the town. You're not selling dry fruit, Tu B'Shvat. How can you have Tu B'Shvat without dry fruit? It's almost like having Sukkot without a Sukkot or a Dal Minim or Chanukah without a Menorah. How can you do that? Or without Latkes, even worse. But, you know, how can you do that? So they came to the Chassam Sefer, and the Chassam Sefer says, well, you know, well, what do you want me to do? Let's ask him what the issue is. This is in print, it's in the Chuvas of the Chassam Sefer. And the fellow said, there's a problem, that there's a rive of dry fruit. The majority of dry fruit are menuga, are infested. So Chassam Sefer looks at him surprised. He says, what do you mean? Most of them are infested. So he says, yeah, in every barrel of dry fruit, that's apparently how he got it, was in barrels. Says every barrel of dry fruit, there's at least one bug in a barrel. No such thing as a barrel that doesn't have any bugs. So they're infested. So Sova told him, he says, you're right. For a store owner, it's infested because every barrel has a bug, but you're wrong. It's 100% mutter for you to sell, because in the 5 or 6 pieces that each person takes home, there isn't. Now, I'm going to tell you even more than that. In the 1 or 2 that each person eats, there's definitely not a miyot hamatzi. It's definitely not. It's not a rive, and it's probably not even a miyot hamatzi. In other words, the amount has to be what a person is taking home for themselves, so to speak. In other words, a bulk amount, then it's a different question for hashkachos, how a hashkacha has to deal with it on a bulk amount. But if in what you're taking home, it's unlikely that there's going to be a significant minority, you wouldn't have to check. If there's likely to be a significant minority, then you would have to check. Furthermore, let's say, yeah, you're making a big family get together, it's Tu B'Shvat, you're having your children, your grandchildren, your nephews and nieces that are studying in yeshiva or seminary or whatever it is in Israel, and some second cousin that lives on the kibbutz over there, and whatever it is, you're making a whole big family get together on Tu B'Shvat, and you bought enough dry fruit for 25 people, 30 people, whatever it is, you bought a lot. Yeah, does that mean that now, and you want people to come and sit down, you don't want it to become a whole ordeal that everybody has to start checking everything, and it's going to become like, you know, like the like a game of dreidel, that the one who wins gets the bug and it screams out, I got a bug, and everybody else is grossed out and doesn't want to eat. You want to have everything under control and prepared and ready. So what do? You say, okay, I'll check it before, but what? That means I'm going to check now 30 figs and 30 dates and 30 apricots and whatever else it is. Right? I'm going to start checking all these things, opening them up. They're not going to look so pretty anymore. And I'm going to. So no, you don't have to. I can ascertain that in what I bought, there isn't a miyot hamatzli. How do I do that? I have to do a significant sample. Usually in what you buy at home, a significant sample would be 3. Industrially, we might say a bigger amount, depending on the exact type of miyot hamatzli and why it's caused and how it's caused, etc. We might say 100, we might say 1,000. But for the regular domestic situation where somebody's bringing home something, then they want to check it, and this will go, in the guides that you have in front of you, that's actually only the back of the OU's bug guide. I think it's available online for a few dollars or something like that, the full bug guide from the OU. That it's the same thing. I mean, I'm going to get to that in a second. A little bit later, I'll get to that, not a second. If you have created a significant sample, which is usually going to be 3, you checked 3, unless you have hundreds or thousands or whatever it is, then it might be a little bit more that you need to check, or it might be if it's various boxes, and we'd say 3 from each box or something like that. But you should check 3 or a handful from each thing to ascertain anything that has reasonable doubt that it has bugs. You check that item, a few of them from that container, from that box. I've ascertained, and if you haven't found anything, then you can reasonably assume that it's clean because you checked a significant sample. Okay, raisins. Raisins, I will get to. Thank you. That was very important. I actually don't even know if it's on the list there at all. And that was a very good question. I will get to that. Anyway, with that being said and done, that's what you would do at home. You know, I don't want to forget about raisins. I'm sure nobody will let me forget about it, but I'm going to address that now. Raisins don't need. That what? Of what? That's according to all halachic authorities. I don't think anybody argues on that. In other words, again, if you're checking something industrially, it might be different because there might be other factors that you have to take into account. In other words, when I'm checking a box of something that's all together, so first of all, it came from the same area on the plant, so it's in all likelihood it came from the same from the same mateh, from the same orchard or whatever it is, right? And to the same on the same truckload, on the same shipment, on the same batch on the line, that was packaged together. So at whatever point in time there would have an infestation would have developed, they would have all had the equal chance to be infested. Whereas in industry, in other words, you'd have to ascertain what would be the various variables that would contribute to bug infestation and base your sample checking on that. Now the problem is if you have something that's in between, you know, it's a real miotamatsui, you probably would then have to check at least close to everyone. You know, it's to ascertain that you've taken out nearly anything that could have been infested. That's what the miotamatsui will demand. That's why you're checking these things in the first place. But when I'm checking one box, the box becomes the item that needs to be checked. If I check three and found it clean, then it can be assumed that the rest of it is clean. These are all in the concept of miyotamatsu. In the realm of lamdos and yeshiva and the base medrash, they might throw around other svaros, other halachic logic, so to speak. But halacha lamaisa, what's paskind, is this. Raisins. No. Batel b'shishim, again, I told you that we're not going with bitl because we're talking about whole bugs, so they're not batel. Batel b'shishim is a sort of bitl that works in certain types of instances. With certain types. No. Back to the raisins. I guess I can leave it for the end because I'm going to be reminded. Now, again, if somebody wants to be choshesh, if somebody wants to be more machmer, wants to do like anything that's brought down in any book by any author or whatever it is, they're always welcome to. I'm not taking that right away from anybody. Halachically, raisins aren't a new topic. It's an old topic. It's discussed in Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kelim, that's the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, of Yossi Karo and the Ramah is what we generally refer to as the Shulchan Aruch. Yossi Karo is the Mechaber, the author of the base of the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah was his Ashkenazi counterpart who added in Minag Ashkenaz and sometimes argue with him on a halachic basis from other Rishonim that maybe one, sometimes it could just be chalked up to the fact that one of them had access to certain Rishonim in a certain topic and the other one didn't. But that's the basic, that's the body of the Shulchan Aruch. On the side is what we call the Nosei Kelim, which is their commentaries, depending on which chelek of Shulchan Aruch, it will be different commentators. And that's the nerve system of halacha, is the Shulchan Aruch with the Nosei Kelim, for all of Klal Yisrael. The Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kelim then afterwards explain in greater depth the exact questions involved. Rule that raisins do not need to be checked. Now I'll explain to you why. The reason for that is as follows, that raisins, if I find a bug in a raisin, there's what we would call a svek sveka, a double question. Okay, what's the double question? If I find a bug in a raisin, I don't know where it came from. It could be that the egg was in the raisin beforehand and hatched afterwards. So now there's a bug in the raisin. But the bug, again, back to whoever was asking with the water, the bug came from the raisin. It never was shot. So if it was after it was off the tree, when it's on the tree, so then it has a dinner of Sharitz al-Ha'adamah, that it crawled on the ground because the tree is attached to the ground, so the trees like being on the ground. But if it hatched only after the grapes were harvested, which is very frequent because the grapes that are used for raisins are going to be late harvest, so they should have a higher Brix, a higher sugar level in the grape, so you end up with a sweeter raisin. Because if you take a dry, sour grape at the beginning of the season, you're not going to end up with a very tasty raisin when you dry it out. In order to end up with a tasty raisin, especially if you don't have some extra sugar, you got to leave it on until the end of the season. Plus, you may as well sell fresh grapes whenever you can sell fresh grapes, and then leave that as to whatever started getting overripe at some point in time. So very likely that the egg hatched after the raisin, after the grapes were harvested, and therefore the bug inside it would be mutter. So that's one. So now I have a suffix on each raisin. I don't know if there is a bug, and if there is a bug, which is a berry, I don't know if it would be sharitz ala dama. That is coupled with the fact that in the OU's office we've done significant research, quite significant research, where we find that in a box where you have usually over 300 raisins, in one out of every 3 to 6 boxes, you'll find maybe one insect inside the raisin. It's far less than 1%. And even people who say that they find more here in Eretz Yisrael or in certain types of cheaper raisins or whatever it is, nobody's talking about finding 6%. I mean, 6% of the raisins you'll find. So even with Rav Eliashiv, there wouldn't be reason to be machmer. I'm going to tell you more than that. You probably all buy products at some point in time or another that have raisins in it, whether it's some sort of cereal bar and granola bar type of thing, whether it's some sort of cookies, whether it's challahs, Rosh Hashanah time. Now, you can go into any bakery. You don't have to call up Nevada Kashrus things. You can go into any bakery that makes these raisin challahs and whatever it is and ask any of the workers there if anybody checks the raisins. Nobody's checking the raisins. There isn't a Kashrus organization out there that's makbid to check their raisins before they use it, no matter what they write in their guides. Okay, on me. That being said, you're not obligated to check raisins. Again, somebody wants to, gesundtehei, check what you like. If you find more bugs than that, the problem's not raisins. The problem's where you bought the raisins, which we'll get to also. That the package could be open, or if you buy people here in Israel, people go to the shuk, they buy things sometimes open. Could be you bought it from a place and he's stocking raisins for a very long time or whatever it is, and the bugs develop there afterwards, and then you're more likely to find fruit flies and ants and things like that. If you find those types of bugs in anything, the infestation, again, is not particular to the item that you're finding it in. Thrips, little worms, particularly there's different types of bugs on lettuce that very often blend into the color of the lettuce. They look like a green lump or whatever it is. There's all sorts of bugs like that that are particular to the produce that you're buying. When usually if it's an ant or a common fly or anything bigger than that, it's usually, again, where it was stored and how it was stored. Nothing to do, so maybe stop buying at that store. But it doesn't mean that now all raisins or all apples or all whatever it was that you found it in need to be checked so intensely. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Mutter means permissible, and bittel means nullified, that it becomes nullified in the greater mixture. And usually in a greater mixture, yes. Yes, there are other dry fruit that you'd be able to use it for. The dried apricots, you don't have to check. The two that they gave out here are the two that you more frequently have to check. A date and a fig. Okay, and hopefully we'll get to that. The OU's bug guide, we don't have, I'll tell you another story. Rabbi Belsky Zichrono Livracha, one of the last projects that he left with the OU was a project to deal with various new technologies in kitchen appliances. Now that things are digital, it might change the way it works with the refrigerator, because every time you open or close the refrigerator, or even if I have the light off or whatever it is, there's information being recorded to the half, to percentages of a degree. The less than half a degree will be recorded right away, and it's stored in terms of when it should trigger the refrigerator to work again. So Hrabowski felt that that's already a problem of, that's already more of a problem when it comes to Shabbos and just overall changing the temperature and maybe eventually triggering something, because over here, you know that each tiny move is doing something very exact. So Hrabowski felt that the OU was the best organization to deal with these issues. He asked Rabbi Elephant, the CEO, the COO of the OU, to meet him at a appliance store, and he started working on various patents to deal with the issue, which now are being sold with the OU Hashgacha on it. And Rabbi Belsky said, Rabbi Elephant, I feel that it's very important for us to get involved in this, because we don't have any gios in this. We don't have any benefit. We're not going to derive any benefit from this item that is so much so in any direct way. You know, we're not trying to sell any products. When we research something and tell you that something's mutter or something's usser, it's being done, something's permitted or prohibited. We did so out of purely as a community service. So in the bug guide, things that it doesn't mention, dry fruit that it doesn't mention that are common dry fruit, I'm not talking about if you find some sort of exotic dry fruit that nobody's ever heard of before, but dried apricot, I don't think we talk about how to check, because we don't think you have to check it. Raisins, we also don't talk about, because we don't think it needs to be checked. Okay, we'll get to nuts also. What? Strawberries definitely have to be checked well. Not 5 hours. If it was soaked for 5 hours, you probably don't have to check it anymore. You can just eat it. I don't want to get into everything. I want to get to these fruit that were passed out. It is mentioned in the guide there in the back, I believe. Okay, it is mentioned in the guide in the back. And maybe afterwards we can talk about that a little bit more. Yes. So what I'm going to explain to you is like this. We've actually found that there is not... This guide is actually good for pretty much anywhere in the world. We found that there isn't that much differences in terms of where there might be a difference is that there might be more common infestations, a slightly higher rate or whatever it is. But things that aren't infested ever won't be infested in Israel either. And things that will be infested, you're going to tell me about flour, and I'll get the flour. Now they started selling pre-sifted flours. The pre-sifted flours, it's not really pre-sifted. It goes through a centrifuge. In America, all flour goes through a centrifuge. When it goes through a centrifuge, even the eggs get cracked. So there's nothing in the flour that's even going to hatch, even when you leave it around your house or your apartment for a while. That's why you don't have to refrigerate these bags of flour. So after opening to refrigerate it, that's because of the flies and the ants and whatever around kitchens. And because there's warmer temperature in Israel all year round, there's greater volume of ants and flies at all times of year, and that's why it's important to keep such things refrigerated. The flour in America is all like that plastic bag of pre-sifted flour or whatever. I'm not saying all of them. There are some bakeries. There's a bakery that we certify that he sells pre-sifted flour also, and his pre-sifted flour has to be kept refrigerated because all he is doing is sifting in his industrial sifter, which is much easier, and then, say, I'm happy to sell it to you for an extra shekel. But that's the idea. Most of these pre-sifted flours, that's what they're doing, is that it's going, the ones that aren't being sold refrigerated, that's what they're doing. It goes through a centrifuge. We have a company here in Afula that has a centrifuge that it puts the flour through and is one of the companies that's selling these quote-unquote pre-sifted flours. Really, we have not found any difference after many years. It wasn't something that was over a year or whatever it is. It was many years of checking things in various different countries, and that's where we're pretty comfortable. Every now and then somebody tries to come up with something that they think is, and we're always happy to have them present it to us. Okay, now. Okay, I'll show you the bugs. Yeah. I found the bugs in your flour also. What I mean is, it's again, that's a question to know what you're looking for. empty the sifter out onto, take it backwards, empty it out onto a piece of white paper, leave it there for a few seconds, pick up the white paper, and you'll see little yellow bugs crawling up. Just a question of knowing what you're looking for. Afterwards you might see the yellow bugs. And then also, again, you know, there are particular individuals who maybe, you know, are so nearsighted or so far-sighted or whatever it is, that if they hold it at just this distance or that distance, won't necessarily see what most other people would see. If they would be, you know, if they ate something because they didn't see the bug, I don't think they would be over on an iser per se. On the other hand, I don't think that would be the guide. That's how you would set up the guide as to what is okay to eat, not okay to eat. All right. Taking the figs, because the figs is the most important. I'm going to take questions afterwards. I'm sorry. So if you take the fig and you rip it open in the center of the fig, usually it rips pretty easy to dry figs. And now you have an open fig. There's two, again, we talked about two things that would consecrate, that would be considered an insect. Now, aside from that, there's one other thing to look for in figs and in the dates, which is webbing. Okay? Webbing. That very often the bugs will burrow inside. They're going to want to lay eggs. And then what's going to have happened is that they'll have they'll be webbing around on the inside. So if you see webbing, even if you don't see the insect, it means it definitely was an insect there. It means that there's likely to be an insect there. And because it's likely to have an insect there, it should be assumed infested, and you should not consume it. If there's webbing in it, even if you don't see the insect, it means it definitely was an insect there at some point in time. It means that there's likely an insect there still.
Is this webbing? Is that webbing?
I don't know. Mine doesn't have any webbing. I can't see webbing from that far. Webbing is usually like white. It looks kind of like a... It looks a little bit like a spider web. Usually it's usually a little bit soft and fuzzy. No, this was that you opened it from the center. This is just the center.
Should we look at this?
This is fine. Now, what I want to say about both the figs... Sorry, what? Wait, I'm sorry. I'm just going to ask for quiet, and I'll take one question at a time. So you can actually have mine. Mine is totally clean. You can have mine. Webbing, or if you see something actually, webbing is
it's more common to find. It's easier to see. Okay.
Now we're going to get to the date now. All right, if everybody will sit back down. No, sorry. No, you have to look for a bug also. But if there's a bug, you'll see a bug, then either something moving or you'll see a... If you find webbing, you should assume that there definitely was a bug in that one. What? Then you should throw the whole thing out. Okay, this date didn't open so nicely, my date. But usually the date will open more... If you want to make sure that your date opens nicely, you can take a regular kitchen knife, make a slit in the side, and then it will open up pretty much dead center. Okay? And again, now the dates will have white on the center next to the seed. Okay? But that does not necessarily, those white lines is not webbing. When you see webbing, it's going to be, again, shorter, fuzzier lines, not so perfectly straight up and down. If it's just straight lines up and down the center following the pattern of the outside of the pit, that's not webbing. But if you find something in the opposite direction or in a few different directions or sticking out and it's more like a soft, fluffy type of texture, that would be webbing. It's less common in dates than in figs. And I'm going to tell you something else. Usually, the nice medjool dates that you buy will not be infested. When they do have bugs, it's much more common in America, and that's because of their longevity, that they have a long shelf life, so to speak, especially if you're not concerned with bugs. And they can keep it in stores, and some of these stores, you know, they sell these types of dates in aren't necessarily, it's not like the fruit section in your local supermarket, which is kept nice and cool and whatever it is. They, during the winter at night, it gets very cold and maybe a little bit moist, and during the summer, it gets very hot, and if it's a muggy area or if it's a rainy summer day, it can be very moist and hot at night. And it can allow for infestation to develop into the store. So again, then you'll be looking for more like regular little worms, these little, more like pinworms and things like that. That's what you'll find, pin-like worms, I shouldn't say pinworms, I'm sorry. Pin-like worms, you know, little tiny needles. That will be more common, but that's usually, again, because it was left in a store for too long. So if you find like a great deal, you go to one of these old, like Yerushalayim HaKodesh, that looks like nobody's walked into since they've opened up Supercell. Okay, and you find there this box in the corner, and you ask him how much it is, and he gives you some great price on it, there might be infestation. Usually, if you're buying it in a nice supermarket, in some, you know, nicer fruit and vegetable store, you know, more boutique-y type of store that's frequented, etc., it's less likely to find something. We found when the OU in general, we don't certify things that are going to be infested. If there's an OU on it, it generally means that it's ready to be eaten from a kashrus perspective. Again, if you buy a piece of raw meat, I didn't say you can cook it just because it had an OU, that you can eat it without cooking it just because it had an OU on it. The only exception that we have to that is raw livers that say on it that it needs to be broiled. That's, I think, the only exception that we have to not ready to eat food. All produce that has an OU on it, from our standpoint, is bug free. So we had an issue a few years ago. It was actually really cute. It was soon after I started working for the OU here in Israel, and they got an email from one of my first cousins in America that he found infestation in OU certified dates. So they forwarded me the email. I said, you know, and I ended up, you know, calling up my cousin, asking him all sorts of questions. The story was, you know, since then we're very much at top of the game, and we check the dates here. We almost never have an issue with infestation over here on this side of things. At the time, I spoke to it's a factory that we co-certify with the Eidah Haredes. I spoke to the person at the Eidah Haredes. He told me none of their dates ever have bugs. He said if somebody found a bug, it means that it was on the shelf life. The kachave, what he sent, you know, then he sent in pictures, and we saw what he found was like these little larvae that you can kind of, that sometimes develop in like rice and different food like that in the kitchen also, again, dependent on the weather. And, you know, I think it probably would have eventually developed into some sort of moth, you know, those little tiny moths that you have in, like, on the East Coast. Black stuff in what, in the date? On the pit, your black stuff? I don't know. I don't see yours. If there's a black dot that you see either the anatomy of a bug or that you see it moving, that would be considered a bug. No, so there might be there's slight grooves on it. Again, I don't know exactly what you're referring to. You know, all sorts of things. You know, people sometimes bring an S-stroke and they start telling me all sorts of different things that they found on it. They say, you know, I found the black dot on the top. Sometimes they come and they bring the S-stroke and it's nothing and I can take it off. Sometimes they bring the S-stroke and they say it was black and I look at it and I say, really, it looks pretty brown to me or it looks pretty white.
Tell us if this is a webbing.
Where? No, there's no webbing.
This is not webbing.
That's not webbing. That's from the outer shell of the seed and that's bringing up the top.
Here, I understand, but what about...
Yeah, that's also, it's the top of the pit. That's not webbing.
That's not webbing.
Yeah, it's not webbing. Those are the date, you're either looking for webbing, which is going in the opposite direction from the seed, not in the same direction, or you're looking for bugs. For bugs.
Just webbing?
No, that's from the seed. That's the outer coating of the seed. Okay, now I keep on being asked about nuts. I think probably the program is supposed to be over, but I'll answer the question about nuts, and then afterwards, if anybody else has any other questions they want to ask, they're welcome to come over to me within the next few minutes and ask them. The nuts is as follows. Roasted nuts should not have any problem with infestation because even if there was a bug, before it was roasted, it would be singed. No bugs can withstand 450 degrees. Or, you know, at least whatever, 300 degrees Celsius or whatever it is, but usually it's even at 450 degrees Celsius. Raw nuts have seasons. You should check them. That's seasonal, but again, it will be pretty obvious. In other words, if it's a cashew, so you open it down the center. And then you'll see, it will be very obvious. Either you'll see a hole and you'll see like a little worm, or you'll see a worm just nestled in the middle. Then you shouldn't, you know, and again, if you find a few of them, check a handful per batch. You know, I would say to check more than three, probably like a handful, four or five, from a bag or a bunch that you buy. That's unfresh. If it's the roasted, you know, the salted, roasted cashews and that type of almonds and that type of stuff, you don't need to. Regular almonds, you don't need to open up. Just check on the outside that there isn't any holes from infestation. Because again, if there's no, yeah, all right, whatever, we'll leave it at more or less at that.
At the shuk in Gator Haredes, there was, we took a bunch of the mixed nuts, put it in the bag. When it was brought home, they were found to be worms. Was it because it was old?
It was either because it was old or there could be a recent infestation also, something relatively new, where you have, that it was left out and there was worms
Gator
and something.
Haredes.
There was something wormy in the next bucket over or whatever it is. But it's not from the
actual nuts.
Yeah. Again, if it's fresh nuts, there could be infestation, especially depending on the time of year. Thank you very much. You should all have a lovely Tu B'Shvat, a bug-free Tu B'Shvat, and enjoy your dry fruit.